You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. The name of this program is The Great Leap Forward. My name is John Malkin, and this program is now in its sixth year here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can listen to The Great Leap Forward every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock right here at 96.3 or on the World Wide Web at www.freakradio.org. The Great Leap Forward focuses on nonviolence and anarchism, social change, and spiritual growth. Some recent interviews include Charles Johnson, author of Turning the Wheel, Essays on Buddhism and Writing, Venerable Robina Corton, former editor of Mandala magazine and Buddhist teacher, and tonight you'll hear an interview, a couple of interviews with members of the band Bad Religion. First, you'll hear an interview with Jay Bentley, bassist for the band Bad Religion, and then a brief interview with the lead singer, Greg Graffin. And I had the pleasure of interviewing both of these musicians when they were last in Santa Cruz a few years ago. And this interview is from a month ago, May 2003, when they returned to Santa Cruz on their recent tour. Bad Religion has put out quite a few albums over the past 20 years, including No Control, Against the Grain, Generator, Recipe for Hate, Stranger Than Fiction, and The Gray Race. And they, an interesting thing, there's a lot of interesting things about the band. One is that they have a research fund. They accept applications for university or high school students in the United States who are interested in scientific research. It says on their website, Bad Religion has spent almost two decades questioning and challenging the tacit dogmatic structure of our society. Our methods have been non-traditional in that we have used the avenues of pop culture and the media. But since we have always promoted questioning instead of professing to know all the answers, our process has been fundamentally scientific. Through our works, we have advanced many testable hypotheses about the world we live in. The research fund was created to allow students to pursue field-oriented investigations in cultural or natural science. It is an award with an educational focus and is meant to promote self-motivated discovery, practice of the scientific method, and experience in scientific writing. All of the band members have traveled throughout the world and have a strong interest in understanding of science. Greg Graffin, the lead singer, has a bachelor's degree in anthropology and a master of science degree in geology from UCLA. He is currently working on his thesis at Cornell University, and you'll hear him talk a little about that later in the interview. You can check out Bad Religion's website at www.badreligion.com. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and here is a interview with Jay Bentley, the bassist for the band Bad Religion, and it's always a great pleasure to speak with him. This is the second interview I've had the pleasure of having with him. Here now is Jay Bentley with Bad Religion.
Well, it's nice to see you again here in Santa Cruz.
It's always good to be back here. I like it here a lot.
Yeah. And the moon's going to be changing colors tonight.
Supposedly. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be nice, huh?
Yeah.
It's nice to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, this is true. You look happy. You look like you've been in the right place at the right time for, I don't know, maybe today was a good day.
23 years. Yeah. I've been in the right place at the right time, I think. Yeah, because I'm still here doing this and I really like it, so it's all good, right? Today, I go through funks and ups and downs, and sometimes just I get unhappy, but never about what I do, probably more about what I don't do. I think I get down on myself about, you know, sometimes I'm semi-sedentary. But, you know, things like this, being able to be in the right place at the right time to watch an entire eclipse of the moon, that's just providence. You don't get to call that one.
Yeah. Bad Religion has been around for 23 years?
Yeah, 23. Can you believe it?
Man. Yeah, that's wild.
It's a long time.
That's wild. Well, and since you were here last, a lot has happened. I mean, in the world, in terms of huge events affecting a lot of people, September 11th, 2001, affected a lot of people and led to a lot of things happening. The United States ended up bombing Afghanistan somehow as a result of that. And there's been another war on Iraq. What's been your attitude towards these things and your feelings about these?
Well, I think as far as the general populace is concerned, these are all new events. But I'm pretty sure these things have been going on for 500 years. You know, the attack on the World Trade Center of September 11th was only different from the Oklahoma City bombings and that it wasn't an American driving a Ryder truck. So, I mean, let's be realistic about it. It wasn't like a new phenomenon. America was just living in a bubble of we've never been attacked other than Pearl Harbor. The war on Afghanistan was a continuation of the 1990-91 war on Iraq. They just sent over 320,000 troops, did nothing basically, snipered some shit and blew up some caves, and then promptly turned the troops around and marched them straight into Iraq. And that was so predictable, anyone could have seen that coming. And now all of a sudden they're saying, well, U.S. is eyeing Syria. Really? Let's march the guys over to Syria. So, I mean, it's almost predictable, this entire thing. It's just control of the Middle East, and that's been an agenda since Reagan. And these are all the same people, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, all of them are all, you know, the same people that were involved from 85 onward. Mm-hmm. Nothing new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. It is nothing new.
Yeah. And you know, when people act surprised that that there are so many angry people in a certain region of the world, angry at Americans, and they can't figure out why. Well, how about a 12-year-old embargo that's killed 300,000 kids because they can't get medicine? Oh, well, we gave them medicine. Saddam just kept it. Okay, well, why was he in power? Oh, well, we gave him all of his money and weapons to fight Iraq or Iran or, you know, like, and that's how it's always been. Like, who's fighting the Soviets now? Okay, well, let's give them all their stuff. Let's give Osama all these weapons because he's the leader of the rebellion against the Soviets. Oh, who's fighting Iran? Because we don't like the Ayatollah Khomeini. Oh, let's give all the money to this Saddam guy. He seems okay. 12 years later, give us our ball back. We don't want you playing with it anymore.
Yeah, he's okay as long as he's playing by the rules of the United States.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's the, right now. You know what? I'll tell you what. This is the biggest change. I think that the concept of the United States, outside of the United States, was that America is kind of a bully. Well, now it's just a fact. That's the biggest change. Now we are the fucking assholes that everyone thought we were. And so foreign travel is now going to be really interesting. And you're going to see a lot of backpacks with Canadian flags on them. I'm Canadian. Yeah, okay, sure you are, buddy.
Yeah,
that's the biggest change. Because the world now just thinks we're just crap. And you know what? We deserve that. Because as far as I remember, everyone said, we don't want the war. And then once the war started, everyone just kind of rolled over. Well, I guess there's nothing we can do about it. Well, really? Okay. If that's the way everybody feels, but I also know that 51% of the people still feel that Saddam Hussein was the guy flying the plane into the World Trade Center. 51%. No. Duh. So, you know, you start realizing really quickly that the 600 million people that make all of this up are just kind of happy not knowing. You know, ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
And we're proving that every day.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think that some people have said that we live in the information age, and we do have huge amount of information at our fingertips, but it seems almost like there's too much information or an overload that leads to people actually knowing less.
It's hard to filter out what's right, and just even today where we're driving down to Monterey and I'm listening to like the Republican radio show, whatever that local, and this guy's just talking. I go, he has no idea what he's saying, but everybody's calling going like, yeah, I want to agree with you. And this lady called and said the Democrats were intentionally not paying teachers so that the kids would remain stupid because it was the Democrats' agenda to dummy up America. And I said, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard, but she fully believes it, and she's allowed to be on the radio saying this. So how you can get to that point in your life where that's what you believe, that's the frightening part. And you think that the Democrats are trying to dummy up America? Good on you. Yeah, it's not them. It's not anybody. No one has anybody to blame but themselves. Because I don't know about you, but my television came with a remote control. And every book I've ever had, I was pretty much able to close it and put it away. Go, oh, that's crap. But for some reason, so many people just want to sit there. And when someone's talking, it's almost like they're hypnotized. I've been hypnotized.
You know, I want to ask you about something related to all of this. Bad Religion's music and the lyrics really talk about learning for yourself, trusting yourself, finding your own way, knowing your own reality. These are realms of thinking and exploring that are really common in spiritual wisdom traditions.
Sure, absolutely.
And What's your feelings about spiritual traditions, and maybe what have you learned, or what kind of practices do you have yourself?
For me, and I, you know, anytime that religion comes into play with us as a band, we make sure that we identify ourselves as individuals, because we don't have a collective agenda against or for a specific religion. I myself have a leaning towards a mix of Western and Eastern philosophies, where I just try to take all the good stuff out of it without the fire and brimstone and the mean and spiteful God part. And I immediately remove the Santa Claus-looking figure and say, that's not going to happen either. I think sometimes lyrically, the thing that you talk about, more of that seems to come from Brett, because Greg is just agnostic. As a scientist, he just says, look, I'm a scientist. You prove it to me and I'll gladly accept it. But until you do that, I won't. Brett, on the other hand, wants to believe it, but just can't because he wants to. Does that see the difference there? Like Greg just says, no. And Brett says, no, but I want it to be. I really do. And so, you know, it's all about the jump. It's all about, and he always asks me, he goes, how do you do it? I go, I just don't care. You build up the wall. And I just never really cared about it. I don't like what people do in the name of their religion. And that was where my problem, that's why we all kind of got along, was because while I felt a spiritual connection to something that helped me in times of feeling like, you know, nobody gives a shit, but there's somebody out there that does. I just never liked what people did to it. They would bend it to fit themselves. And it always ended up in violence. Did you ever notice that? Like, yeah, well, we're just going to go ahead and kill everybody that doesn't believe what we do. And it's still happening now. I think that part of that questioning and searching is what makes us human, you know? And unfortunately, it's what we do with our answers that also makes us human. So, you know, sometimes we come up with things and we write them in stone, and if you don't agree with me, well, then I have no choice but to hurt you. And that's kind of a drag, but that's so human. Whether it's religious or even just, you know, a fundamental lifestyle, you know, surfing. I grew up surfing, and it's like, you're not from here, are you, bro? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, in a way, you kind of understand it because you go, well, you can't have 600 people out here on the Point Break because there's not enough room for everybody. But at the same time, you know, that's just so human, and we are all that. That's the part we all have to accept.
Yeah.
You know, none of us are perfect, and none of us are ever right. We're all just ourselves, and that's why one of the things we say is just educate yourself. And even if what you come up with as an answer is completely the opposite of anything that you might have ever gleaned from us, that's okay too, because we also have a song that says, "Do what you want, just don't do it around me. I don't care what you do, just don't bring it into my party. It's all good. Just stay over there.
Yeah.
Give me my 15 feet."
It's interesting with science. There's always such this division between science and religion, or material, proving things in a material way, or proving things in a spiritual way. And there's been some breakthroughs in science with some technology of identifying, I'm just thinking of this because of what you said, identifying the parts of the brain that are activated when people are happy,
right,
and how those are activated. And there's been some studies recently about that part of the brain being activated mostly when people are practicing compassion for others,
right,
not for themselves.
Random acts of kindness. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, that's the theory of anonymity. When you do something anonymous, and don't, you know, something nice, not bad, and you just walk away and don't ever tell anybody that you did it, is like one of the strongest things you can ever do for yourself, because you live with that goodness inside you. And the minute you go tell somebody, now you're bragging about it, and it kind of diminishes. And I've noticed that too. Obviously, and I was just thinking about this. I said Greg was agnostic, which is not true. He's just an atheist, because agnostic would mean like, well, yeah, kind of, maybe I'll believe him. He's not at all. Brett would be agnostic, but not the agnostic front. I know what you mean, and I sometimes, I think that's what I was saying, like sometimes I get funking and it's depressing. That's what I get depressed about. It's not that I'm not doing enough for me, it's that I really feel like I'm not doing enough around me. And I have a wife and two kids, and like everything I do is for them. And they know that, so they're totally happy, because they know that all I'm doing is just for them. Like, it's never like I'm on a selfish tip. It's like, it's just for you guys, because you come first now. You're kids, and welcome to the world. But then it's even the one step out, where it's like, hey, you know, my neighbor's got cancer right now. Maybe just one phone call. Walk over and go, are you all right? You need anything? No, I'm okay. All right, that's cool. And that's all it takes. And every now and then, I might not do that for a couple of days, because I'm busy fixing a lawnmower, and I'm like, oh, I better go call him, because I haven't called in a couple of days. So sometimes maybe I start to feel like I'm a bad friend, because I don't call my friends and tell them how much I appreciate them. Another simple little thing. And it's just like, there's a great commercial that I saw. It's for the Volkswagen Beetle, I think, right? The convertible. And the girl sees it and smiles, and then she says something nice to them. And like that chain reaction of niceness, right? And I love that. I go, that's all it takes. Just, you know, instead of like, hey, fuck you. One nice thing. Hi, how you doing today? And so it's so easy, but apparently so difficult for us as people to do.
It seems like things work on a really subtle plane sometimes. You can really affect someone in a negative way by saying two words. And equally so, you can affect someone really positively with two positive words.
Yeah, or even just a smile.
Yeah.
You know, just instead of being a grouch, just smile.
Yeah.
And be happy to be there, because, you know, sometimes... It's something that I'm privileged in what I do for a living. So I sometimes get to see people at their best and at their worst, just based on where I'm at and what I'm doing. And it's certainly eye-opening for me to be so deeply entrenched in people's realities. And I have to make sure that I remove myself from that, because otherwise you start thinking that you're part of that too, and that's, you just can't be that. You're just out. You're outside of that. And what I do is not, certainly not a real world behavior. This is bizarre. So, you know, I get to watch people's behaviors and reactions, and I certainly get to see when people are excited and happy about something that they've waited a long time to do or to see, and how fast it would be for me to just make it not good for them anymore. Or we waited a long time to go, like I'll be on a plane flying to Japan to go play a show, and I'm sitting next to a couple who have saved for 50 years to go to Japan, and I'm like, yeah, I got to go work. I hate Japan. Like, now I've just ruined their whole trip. I'm like, great. And you know, that's like a dumb example, but I mean, that's what I mean. It's so easy just to just tear something down. So I mean, that's maybe something that everyone can work on, is instead of just ripping into everybody and tearing all the stuff down, because it's usually out of jealousy. You know, you just don't want someone to be happy. Maybe because you're not, and it's like it's a vicious circle.
I think that all this comes through in the music of Bad Religion. To what extent do you think this comes through, this notion of being kind to yourself and to others and living your own truth?
I think the be kind to yourself comes through more than be kind to others. We try to say that, but you certainly can't expect people to do anything that they don't want to do. And I think more than us just saying, hey, you know, be kind to yourself or be happy with yourself, it's more along the lines of educate yourself, because that's what will make you happy. Because what makes you unhappy is fear. And you know, you become afraid of things because you don't understand them. It's just a lack of knowledge. And it's not saying that people are dumb or stupid, but, you know, they're not like what we were talking about before. There's so much information, and it's so hard to filter the truth out that you end up not accepting any of it, or just accepting the one that you hear the most.
Yeah.
And as the media has grown into a fear machine, because that's what sells, is if you can get people to be afraid of something. Trust me, like when I was growing up, there was never anything called storm warning. It's just rain, dude. Get over it, man. It's not that big of a deal, right? But now all of a sudden it makes the 11 o'clock news as like, storm warning! Dude, you're like, what? Where? Who? It's just rain. But it has to be so over the top, because that's what they need. To be honest with you, I think I'd just rather have naked anchor people. And that would, I'll watch it, as long as they're not like over the top with like trying to scare the crap out of me, I'll watch the naked people. That's just way more interesting to me than like the scary guy.
So there is so much fear propagated. It seems sometimes when I look at the paper or the news, which I actually do rarely, it just seems like the death report or a report on how people mistreated each other yesterday around the world. Doesn't it seem likely that there is as much and as many examples of how people treated each other well yesterday?
Well, yeah. But, you know, growing up in Los Angeles, this was when I started noticing this, was they would bombard you with 28 minutes of people hurting each other and stories of death and fear. And then they'd always have, like, the last 2 minutes was some dog who could surf. Like, the feel-good story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, well, isn't there more feel-good stories? Just, like, that was the only good thing that happened, was the dog was surfing yesterday. But it just doesn't sell. And I think that it's much like religion was 200 to 500 years ago, which was just, it was all fear-based. You were just scared to death of the church and God and everything else, and you did exactly what they told you to do for fear of being either killed or not going to heaven or whatever you thought. It almost seems like it's a control thing now. It's like, well, let's just keep the people so scared they don't want to feel happy. Then they won't come outside. And then they'll all go into their houses and lock the doors, and then we won't have to worry about crowd control, because they'll all be inside with locked doors. Just scare the crap out of everybody. That's fun. I like scaring kids.
You know, the U.S. Patriot Act and a real squashing of civil liberties has happened.
Has the band,
Bad Religion, or any members of the band been attacked by the government or any agency of the government or threatened or, you know, accused of anything?
No, I think that there is the common thread about all the artists who have been attacked and who have been kind of dragged into some kind of special court. They all really seem like they can't defend themselves very well, like the Dixie Chicks, right? A perfect example of, like, let's steamroll the three girls from, you know, just rip into them because they're not going to know what to do. Well, you know, how come nobody ever rips into Jello Biafra or Henry Rollins or us, for that example? It's just like kind of, okay, and I'm not saying that that's what anybody should want, but it just, it always seems like it's the easy target. It's always the big, easy, giant target to attack. And, you know, to be honest with you, I don't really give a rat's ass about the Dixie Chicks, but the fact that an American can't say what's on her mind without being, you know, well, she's a woman, so she can't be castrated, but I don't know what the womanly equivalent of that would be. You know, that's insane. When did we lose our rights to free speech? You know, the KKK can still march, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's what I always hear. But apparently it's not okay to say, hey, the president's a pretzel-choking buffoon. Uh-oh, we're going to steamroll my records now? No, it's just, it doesn't work. And the very fact that all of this is happening is once again justifying why all of this is insane. And it is insane, and it's all about, once again, the terror. The war on terror. And let's keep everybody afraid, and let's not have anybody questioning us, because we really can't defend ourselves. We don't really have any answers, which is true. If, you know, if anybody ever really came up and said, okay, where are the weapons of mass destruction? Well, we're finding them now. Really? Where are they? Well, we found a trailer. Found a trailer. What was in it? We don't know. Some powders. All biological chemicals and weaponry have a shelf life of about 6 to 13 months. After that, they all just turn to harmless jelly or powder because they're living. They don't live very long. So they're not like Twinkies. They don't just sit there on a shelf and you go, like, fire them on. No, they're over. 12 years of embargoes. These guys have had nothing. Nothing. So there are no weapons of mass destruction. There are no anything there. It's like, yeah, he's crazy and doesn't deserve to be running this place. And I'm talking about Saddam Hussein. But at the same time, the principles that we used to justify that invasion were incorrect. And they're lies. And it's just like, I don't want to know about it. But that's a fact.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. government completely fabricated that stuff and even said that there were nuclear weapons components.
Absolutely.
That had been sold to Iraq.
Sure. No, and they and all of the weapons, all of the people who were there in '91, the UN inspectors in '91 said, we found some laboratories, but just blew them up. And there's no way they could have rebuilt them because they have no money and they have no resources. And we were watching all the people who could have sold them anything, and they never did. So it's not possible to sneak that stuff around. It just doesn't work. It's not like pirating a CD. It's a little more high tech. You're like, yeah, I'm burning some MP3s. Well, yeah, okay, that's cool. But there's not a whole lot of downloading of, like, you know, plutonium grade nuclear weapons. It's just, come on, that's just ridiculous. But once again, all it takes is a person of authority to have 5 minutes of airtime on national television to tell people that that's what's happening, and people say, okay, that's okay, well, I don't want that. I don't want him to have that. Well, yeah, nobody wants him to have that. That's why he doesn't have it. We took care of that a long time ago, 12 years ago to be exact. So it's kind of It's frightening that people don't know all this. It's frightening that people don't know about what's been happening in the Middle East. They just assume that it's some sandy place where people are angry. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sounds kind of like Vegas. You know, it's like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing the power of propaganda in that way. And we're all ending up paying for all of this destruction and killing.
Well, and we'll, the sad part is that we will for a long time to come. you know, the retributions from this will be long-lasting. This is not something that's going to go away. And I've been kind of running this thing. The joke that I've been running, and I don't mean it as a joke, but it's something that I'm fairly determined about, which was when George Bush declared war on terror, I said, I won't believe it until they roll the tanks and the battleships into Northern Ireland. When they do that, then I'll go, wow, there really is a war on terror. But right now, it just looks like a war on the Middle East.
Yeah.
That's too, once again, it's much like the Oklahoma City bombing. It's like, well, there was no real faction. Well, there's no real faction here. There's just a bunch of pissed off people. You know, why don't you go ask them why they're mad? You know, it really is honestly the equivalent of just walking up to a wasp nest and whacking it with a baseball bat because you don't want it there. Well, maybe you should just get a guy in a beekeeper suit and move it. You know, duh.
Yeah. And the snowball effect is that people and countries who want to defend themselves against the United States are going to build nuclear weapons and biological weapons.
North Korea is proving that. I mean, obviously, they have one missile. It's not, you know, it's not the end of everything. Like, oh my God, they have nuclear weapons. They have one missile that's unproven. It wouldn't make it across the Pacific. It's the equivalent of a bottle rocket. But they're on their way. You know, right, and they are, and they're on their way because they're afraid of us. Doesn't that say anything to anybody? So instead of us saying, no, 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 we're really not bullies, it's like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to come to you next. Here you go. I mean, this is exactly what we got out of with the Cold War, because we kind of said, look, this is stupid. Why have this kind of mentality? But, you know, I'm disappointed, to say the very least, in my government's behavior. Absolutely.
What kind of hope do you think there is for the government to change, for the way that things are in this country to change? I mean, on the one hand, it seemed pretty huge, the protests against this war happening before it even happened, this latest war. But what kind of hope do you think there is in general for change?
Well, as we get older, our generation gets older, the hope is that the people that start to have more influence on politics and politicians are more like us, right? I talk to my parents and their friends, and my grandparents are still alive, and I sit and talk with them like, okay, what were you guys thinking when you just dumped all the shit in the ocean? Like, well, we just thought it would just go away. But we didn't realize it was washing up on the shore 100 miles down. And I can put it in my brain. And I go, okay, so basically you were just naive about the world. And, you know, when you look at the people that are running things now, you can say, like, they're naive about the world. They actually believe this crap that they're feeding everybody because they're almost from a different time frame and a different mentality. And all it takes is, you know, a couple of guys coming out of California that know who Black Flag is, and that changes a lot. It's like, well, we can't do that anymore. That's not okay. You know, it's much like when I was growing up, all of the police officers that I ever ran into, they were double my age and hated me and wanted to kill me. Well, now they're all like, not, you know, like in their early 20s, and all, you guys are cool. That's a huge change. And I go, if it can go there, it can go everywhere else, right? It has to. So, you know, the hope for the change is just that these people all die of natural causes. I mean, I'm not saying, like, you know, kill them all. I'm just saying, like, and they will, because everybody does. And so all I can do as a person who would like to see more tolerance and more humanity from my government is wait for these people to die and be replaced by younger, more worldly individuals, men or women, who actually understand what it must be like to be living in Afghanistan or Iraq as a mother of three kids whose husband and father is dead, from whether it's from Saddam Hussein or some, you know, other issue, who can't get medicine, who can't get food because there's a 13-year embargo. You know, this is what I saw when everybody saw, like, the cheering in Iraq, in Baghdad. I saw 100 people waving American flags and cheering. I could gather 100 people in Santa Cruz right here to get Iraqi flags and run around and cheer, and just because I go, hey, I'll give you free beer. 100 people does not make a country happy to see them. Where are the crying women? Where are the children huddling in the corner because they're scared shitless? They don't show them because that's not what they want to broadcast to us. So that's another thing, is that when everyone becomes more honest, and that's media, politicians, artists, when everybody finally accepts the reality and says, this is what's actually happening out here. And I'm not talking about, like, being Sean Penn and going over there and going, like, look, that's okay, but that's kind of a publicity run anyway. And you're like, there's got to be more to it than just you flying over there and waving. You know, it's there has to be a collection of individuals who people take as seriously as George W. Bush, which is, that's what's so insane about it. Like, you know, people are far more willing to believe George W. Bush than Noam Chomsky. Okay. George W. didn't even, you know, he's like not an educated man. Okay, that's as easy as I can put it. So, you know, here's a guy coming in with zero history of foreign policy, basically putting us on the brink of World War III, but that's who people choose to believe. And so, given that ratio, anyone that you put in there is going to be believed by the people. It doesn't matter whether it's Bill Clinton or George W. or George the Dad or Reagan or anybody. It's like, as long as the guy's talking, most of the people are believing. So our hope is, once again, that whoever it is that gets in there is at least educated in the ways of the world, and not just, hey, we're America, we live in a bubble, and we don't care. And that's what this government has been doing this since the beginning of his foreign policies. The new tobacco thing. Have you heard of the new tobacco legislation? It's great. They want to have this thing, like, you know, we want America to kind of like ease up on selling tobacco to other countries because kids are smoking, and it's like, well, everybody's stopping smoking in America, so they got to make their money back. But the world, there's another world coalition trying to get up against the tobacco things. Like, America's like, we're not signing it. All right, well, we'll sign it, but we reserve the right to opt out at any minute. It's like, but the world wants this. The world would like this to happen. Well, we don't really care about the rest of the world. We're America. Yeah. Once again, proving that we're just bullies, and what's good for us is what we want, and what's good for you is what we want. So, great.
Do you think that all of this is a sign that the United States is on its way in decline, something like the Roman Empire? A lot of people are having discussions in this realm.
I've had that feeling a couple of times and thought, this is kind of what's... This is, it's so, it's written in history as this. This is what happens. Countries become egotistical and believe that everything they do is for the good of everyone else, but inevitably fails. It's the same as anything else. Once you believe that you're responsible for everyone's happiness, and everyone is inevitably unhappy, and they just want to get away from you. So, I really, I've thought that myself many times, that, wow, this could be the collapse, because if the dollar keeps sinking against the world economy, because the world no longer really is that comfortable with the stability of the greenback, saying, like, well, you know, the guy that's in office right now is kind of a maniac, and I don't want to have my investments there, because who knows what this guy's going to do next, right? I mean, for God's sake, if he can attack a country based on a probable threat, he could attack Canada saying, like, well, you have all the water. We need more water. And I'm not, you know, I'm not making it up. I mean, like, this, you have to be realistic about this. The very fact that he's doing whatever the hell he wants you have to take it literally and say, okay, what's the end game on this? He's just saying to everybody, I can do whatever I want. And I will continue to do whatever I want until somebody stops me. And there isn't anybody that can stop him because he's got the largest army out there right now, other than China. But, I mean, that's the thought of that is what scares me more than anything else. Well, here's our billion. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Keep counting. Billion. 1 billion.
Oh, my. What can you tell me about Bad Religion these days and the music you're making? Is there anything new, anything changing? How has this tour been going?
The tour's great. We were supposed to be in the studio. We kind of had planned that we were going to finish the Warped Tour last year and do a couple of other things and then get into the studio early this year. But Brett had prior commitments to working with Rancid on their record, producing it, and that was supposed to be done in like 6 weeks, and it's 5 months. They've been behind bad. And Brett's freaking, going, I'm going to miss my street date. So he's had no time to write and no time to really concentrate on Bad Religion. Graffin has decided that this is the year he's actually going to get his PhD instead of being a candidate, a lifelong candidate. He has an August 16th date for delivery of his thesis. And so he's just asked for the summer off so that he can finish. And you know, okay, fine, that's cool. And obviously if anything comes along that's something that we have to do, sure, we'll go do it. But the year is kind of slowing down, so we said, well, let's do the record in September or October, provided we have material, and everyone's back to writing. So that's why this tour came up, because we had nothing going on, and we are still a working band. And that was something that everybody felt like, well, we can't just sit around for a year without playing, without doing anything, and then just put out a record and expect everyone to just pick up where they left off. That's a bad thing to do. You know, that's a Guns N' Roses thing to do, which we should have really called this tour Chinese Democracy. You snooze, you lose, you too. I thought about that when we were out on the road. I go, man, I missed the opportunity on that.
Oh, my. I want to thank you for talking to me again. It's sure. Nice to see you again.
I like talking to you about all these things because you always ask the right questions.
Good. One final question. What do you think my chances are on a scale of 1 to 100 of getting a pass to see the show tonight?
Well, what's the better of the two?
100 would be the high. One would be not getting in. 100 would be getting in.
101.
That's pretty good odds.
Yeah, that's like absolute.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm gonna go get one right now.
Oh, that's very generous of you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I know they cut us off a long time ago. They said no more passes, so I'm just gonna go get one right now.
Good, perfect. Thanks.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That was an interview with Jay Bentley, bassist for the band Bad Religion. Here now is a brief interview, also recorded May 14th, 2003, backstage at the Catalyst here in Santa Cruz. Here's an interview with Greg Graffin, lead singer of Bad Religion.
There's an entire army who blindly follow law, and you happen to be one of them, believe it or not. Even though you try not to be, we are on the same plane.
I'm with my dissertation right now, where I'm trying to get interviews from people, and a lot of them are not very responsive. These are Nobel Prize winners, you know, they get to be a little arrogant.
Jay was mentioning earlier that you're working on your PhD now. What's your dissertation about?
Evolution and religion.
Wow.
The tenets of the two bodies of knowledge and how they clash.
And how?
You know, I spend my whole life studying evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spent the other half of my life singing about religion.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really a way to combine the two passions.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, Jay even said, and this is another human being saying this about you, that you're an atheist. So what, you know, I get a lot of feelings from your music about, if I can use the word spirituality, or about precepts about how to be in the world, ideas about how to treat other people, how to treat the environment, how to treat yourself, how to find truth.
Morality is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm a moral person, but I don't believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
My morality comes through naturalism, which is a belief in, basically a belief in the reality of the universe and being able to find the truth through scientific through scientific pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing about that that is meaningless. It's a very meaningful pursuit, and that leads to a very meaningful morality.
Mm-hmm. What are you finding in terms of evolution and religion and the development of these ideas?
Well, I mean, what I did was I sent a poll to the National Academy of Sciences in 22 countries to survey the top brass of evolutionary biology in the world to see what their attitudes were towards religion, and I found almost a complete denial of the truth of religion, and a complete discounting of the tenets of religion, and a complete atheism in all their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I found a very moral and meaningful group of people who were very concerned about the human welfare.
Mm-hmm.
So it tells me that religion or that evolution might be a viable substitute for traditional religion.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
This is very controversial, that
yeah.
conclusion. You know, a lot of people are bummed about it, but
uh-huh.
too bad.
Uh-huh. I think what I gather is that a lot of science and a lot of religion are meeting and finding a lot of common ground where they didn't think that was so. I think of Ken Wilber, who's writing about this sort of stuff. He wrote a book called The Marriage of Sense and Soul.
Well, there's two kinds of people in the world. There's compatibilists and non-compatibilists. The compatibilists are people like this who believe that we should have a dialogue between science and religion, and people should come to terms and understand one another. Whereas the non-compatibilists, most of them scientists, but some of them are hardcore creationists also, they believe, no, the tenets of religion and the tenets of science are completely mutually exclusive. We've got to figure out which one of these is explaining the right picture of the universe.
Where do you lay in there?
I'm a non-compatibilist, mm-hmm. completely. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that religion is a joke these days,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't explain anything, and that's why we have so many lost people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder where all this anxiety and tension mm-hmm. comes from. It's because the symbols of religion have no meaning to these people in their daily lives anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. The story of Jesus Christ does not apply to anyone's life anymore,
mm-hmm.
except in the most metaphorical way. And the people who are believers have to really have a deep metaphorical understanding of the story of Jesus in order to make it applicable at all to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so what most people have today is a little bit of a mix of spirituality, a little bit of the story of Jesus, and a lot of the scientific story that they've heard about the origin of the universe.
Hmm.
So
hmm.
people, and so I think what we need, if I can just get on my soapbox, is we need these scientists who are seen as atheists and as, you know, baby killers and cannibals,
hmm.
you know, the most immoral people in the world. We need them to come forth and say, look, we actually are humanists, and we are scientifically firm in our mm. beliefs. So,
mm. I heard recently, in terms of Buddhism, I heard Buddha described as a scientist who used his own experience and his own awareness as his grounds for scientific experimentation. Do you see that at all? That sort of idea of becoming aware of one's own process and changing it?
Well, I think that science is Science is generally a monistic pursuit, and Buddhism is a monist worldview. And in that sense, I think there's a lot of parallels. I think it's easier to be a Buddhist if you're a scientist than if you are a traditional Western person.
Mm-hmm. Everything's in place.
All right, give me 2 more minutes. A couple more questions here. I don't want to talk too much, but I could go on all night about my dissertation.
I think this is really, really interesting. I mean, some people are really saying the big, huge problems of the world come down to a division between being focused on material and defining material and saying that everything else that is undefinable is not real, or the other camp saying only what is internal and soul is real and all material is not.
Well, that's a fundamental dichotomy that goes back to the pre-classical times. And what you're describing is something that was finally encapsulated. It started with Thomas Aquinas, and then it finally became rock-solid doctrine with Descartes, who came up with the mind-body dualism. And that dualism has plagued us ever since. And I think that you're right to identify it as one of the great tensions in the world. The fact that, to put it into modern terms, it's basically the dualist believes in a natural and a supernatural, whereas the monist believes only in the natural. And that's what I am. I'm a monist and I'm a naturalist, and I don't think there's any grounds for belief in the supernatural. Do I believe in the soul? I believe in there's something we call the soul, but it has a material basis. And in a very short 50 years, we're neuroscientists are going to be able to identify what we've been calling the soul all along is really nothing more than a physiological process in our brain. So I think the soul exists, but it's not a supernatural entity. Mm-hmm. It's something that comes. And do animals have it? Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Animals have it as well as humans. Humans have it a little more developed, that's all.
Do you think other living beings have souls or consciousness besides animals and humans?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Besides animals.
Oh, I'm sorry. To varying degrees, the soul, what we would call the soul probably doesn't exist in any organisms other than mammals, I think.
Mm-hmm. Sort of related to all of this, I've been thinking lately...
Wait, that's not true. Let me retract that. Other than mammals, birds, and reptiles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that's... I'll leave it at that.
And there's not...
I mean, maybe
consciousness.
Some... Well, consciousness is another thing, I think.
Uh-huh.
I'm willing to say there's varying degrees of consciousness in the mammals and in birds and in reptiles, but it's really if you listen to there's a book called A Universe of Consciousness, which is the best modern theory of what consciousness is. It's a purely neuroanatomical definition of it, and I tend to favor that. And by that definition, there's very few organisms that have it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think this is a really huge thing that people are exploring a lot now, and I'm glad to hear that you're exploring it. I mean, in terms of politics, it really shapes things too, and obviously we live in a country that says it's very important to separate church and state, and that's almost a leftist point of view, that we should hold that. And in a way, I think that's true, that it's valuable to do that, because religion can really affect politics and vice versa. But also, if you look at religion as being moral and providing morality in its best sense, we are suffering because we have that separation and that lack.
Okay, there's a moral crisis in the world. It's particularly bad in the United States. Worse here than almost anywhere else. I agree with that. The reason we're having a moral crisis is precisely because of the church, not in spite of the church. If the church were to vanish tomorrow, we would craft a new morality, and it would be based on scientific data, it'd be based on scientific information, and I believe it would make a better society. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that the church didn't have valuable morals to teach. They did, but it was based on lies, and it was based on lies that were uncovered progressively through the Enlightenment period until today. There's nothing that the church used to believe that it hasn't backpedaled on, mm-hmm. In order to remain relevant. Mm-hmm. And so we should just abandon the church as a teacher of a worldview, mm-hmm. and acknowledge the fact that it's not relevant anymore. And the only way that it is relevant is that they scare the shit out of children, mm-hmm. and those children grow up into a world that where they can maintain the tenets of the church by prescription, not mm-hmm. by observation, mm-hmm. and not by any kind of empirical method, mm-hmm. which I think is the key to forming a new morality.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, there's no way we would have any morality about preserving the rainforest had not scientists gone down there and actually studied the species decline in the rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's a direct indicator of morality coming from scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Thank you very much.
Sorry we couldn't talk earlier, but...
Hey, that's all right.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, guys. See you tomorrow.
That was Greg Graffin, lead singer of Bad Religion. That interview was recorded last month, May 2003, here in Santa Cruz. And earlier you heard an interview with Jay Bentley, bassist with Bad Religion. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My name is John Malkin, and the name of this program is The Great Leap Forward. And this program focuses on nonviolence, anarchism, social change, and spiritual growth. And you can hear it right here on Free Radio every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. And we broadcast on the internet all day long, all night long, at www.freakradio.org.
I'm sorry about the world. How could I know? You take it so bad. Just a